Hello and welcome back to All Things Urticaria, your UCARE podcast. For those of you joining for the first time, UCARE, that's the Urticaria Centers of Reference and Excellence, a global network of urticaria fans, experts, researchers, and treating physicians. And today I am super happy to have with me Jason Hawks from California. Hi, Jason. How are you?
Hi, Marcus. Excited to be here with you today.
Super. Thanks for coming on. We recently met in San Diego at the AAD conference. AAD is the American Academy of Dermatology, a huge meeting, 20,000 people. I was amazed to see so many people, and yet also a little bit sad to see so little on urticaria. What was your take, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I've been attending the American Academy of Dermatology when I was a medical student and a dermatology resident. And this meeting, I just can't believe it just keeps expanding infinitely where you think there's this capacity, but to hear that we almost, crossed 20,000 people is just amazing. But it's always a great reunion. We see our old classmates and old colleagues. But to your point, urticaria, just it's something we learn didactically, through our training, but it just doesn't have the representation like some of these other inflammatory conditions. And yet we're seeing this huge explosion in the development and science around this topic that, we need to be preparing these clinicians to, tackle this disease that's, very known to us, but has been, managed, I think, by allergists to a larger degree. And that's right. I think that needs to change. We need to share that.
Totally on board with you on that. You are a practicing dermatologist. Maybe you'll tell our listeners a little bit where you are and you're interested in urticaria. You see lots of urticaria patients and you like it. Tell us about your practice and where you are.
Yeah, so I grew up in Idaho, one of the few states in the United States without a medical school. And one of the close states to Idaho is Utah, which has had a very well-respected school of medicine and actually a well-known department of dermatology. So I ended up after undergraduate training going to the University of Utah, spent a couple of years there and really had that interest in science. So went to the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, National Institutes of Health Research Scholars Program, where I worked at the NIH, lived there in Bethesda for a year, and that really got me interested in immunology. And I was seeing this intersection between immunology with some of the adoptive cell transfer and treatments of metastatic melanoma, using someone's own immune system to fight cancer, was a really exciting time. And these biologics had just kind of crossed in dermatology. So when I went back to medical school, did my clinical training, I was sort of focused on, how could I really bring immunology to a specialty, and dermatology was happening right at that time. Well, the same year I got back, I walking through the winter in Utah, I started getting hives just in being exposed to the cold. And when I would grab a railing, I would get my hands would swell up and be warm and red. And so they diagnosed me with cold urticaria, which was my personal introduction. But I had a great mentor for our resident continuity clinic who really ran the allergy dermatology clinic. And he really taught me how to care for these patients. And that sort of just carried through in my training. I was at Rockefeller University where I did a master's in clinical trials. I was a faculty at Mount Sinai and then ended up for family reasons in Northern California, just in the Sacramento area, where I continued to, see patients and help manage the urticaria patients, both acute and chronic, as they come in.
Yeah, super. Well, that's very interesting. Sorry about your urticaria. You still have it? Is there anything?
I do. It's been over 15 years. Luckily, I can just take one 10 milligram cetirizine. If I take that every day, manage it. Sometimes I'll forget and I'll feel a little bit on my hands or my feet. But I was very lucky to have it pretty mild. But I think that connection to experiencing hives and be able to talk to your patients and relate with that feeling and the sensation and knowing it's coming, it's not fully resolved. Like that really has been a nice connection for me with those patients.
Well, I can imagine. And now you see many patients with urticaria. You help many patients with urticaria. And I understand it's one of your favorite diseases to see, but that's not something that you share with a lot of dermatologists. It's my impression. Oh, maybe there are many more now listening and saying, what is he talking about? I love urticaria. But how can we improve awareness, education, knowledge in the U.S. derm community?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of layers to that problem. And as they've started to evaluate what are those barriers that would prevent a dermatologist from tackling an inflammatory disease, you know, differently than other inflammatory diseases like psoriasis and eczema. And that's been really interesting to tease out. I think there's a few things that I've kind of made my own conclusions on and just talking to my colleagues. One is that it's sort of been assumed that there must be some allergic mechanism in the environment that's driving it. And so we need to get them to the allergist. So that's one aspect. So I think there's a knowledge gap in terms of understanding. We know that, you know, 80% of our cases of chronic or, you know, I love the term chronic idiopathic urticaria. I can understand the reason for going away, but I often will mention that to patients saying, you know, it's really chronic spontaneous urticaria, but I liked idiopathic because then it gets to that point of they're really not a cause to tease out sort of the physical or inducible. But I think that lesson is important to reinforce with our colleagues in dermatology. The second has been, I think, the concern around omalizumab and anaphylaxis, black box warning. That was a concern, I think, superficially. We've seen that in a number of biologic medications, some very good medications in dermatology, such as brodalumab, which had the black box warning for suicidal ideation, but probably one of the single best you know, in terms of efficacy, medications for plaque psoriasis. So we've seen this, it's a risk-averse group. So again, I think we need to educate on that side with anaphylaxis and very low risk, but the very high response rate, complete response rates, over 75%. This really not any more dangerous or complicated than the medications we use regularly, cyclosporin, methotrexate, isotretinoin. So in terms of a safety category, you know, this would be way down on the list of concerns. Yeah. So these are just some of the barriers, I think, that have been there. And we also haven't had a lot of treatments that had been viewed as primary dermatologic-based treatment. Yeah. Now we have things coming in the pipeline like dupilumab, remibrutinib. These are medications that are going to sort of start out probably in dermatology and allergy right from the beginning. And that will be a positive force of change in the community.
Yeah, well, I hope so. And I agree with you. I mean, dupilumab now licensed for chronic spontaneous urticaria in Japan. Final stretch for license in the US, in Europe. And I think US dermatologists are very confident with dupilumab in the treatment of other diseases. And I do hope that this will improve the care received by patients with chronic spontaneous urticaria as well. But you mentioned education, and I was very happy to meet you at AAD, where there was a session where we talked about chronic spontaneous urticaria. Well, you had one, and I was in one, parallel right. Sessions, unfortunately, but at least we're making an effort. And I was super happy to see that the Academy, the American Academy of Dermatology, has just recently decided to come on board as a title society for the next update and revision of the international guideline for urticaria. So things appear to be moving forward.
Yeah, and you know, this was, you know, as you know, when we first met, it was really by email, and I was saying, you know, I want to get involved in this effort. It's important for dermatology to be involved. You know, one of the aspects that triggered that for me in managing patients in this area was that the University of California, Davis, where I was faculty, there was really one allergist in the community. And yet in the same community, there's probably 25 or 30 dermatology providers. So in terms of just an access issue, it doesn't make sense to try to get all these patients to one provider. And it was really a matter of eliminating a few barriers to care where dermatologists start to feel comfortable. I think they're comfortable with the disease. They weren't comfortable with, is it really spontaneous or is there other options, right? So I think that was another reason to kind of push, because these patients really need access, and the allergists by number are, I think, about half of the dermatologists in the US. So we need to be, there's plenty of patients to go around, and we need to be tackling that together. And that was the reason that I reached out to get involved in the international guideline revision. I'd talked to the AAD about, you know, this area is going to get a lot more visibility in dermatology. And, you know, the AAD is the group that we look to for guidance and guidelines and, you know, that credible, reliable information. And I said, you know, we need to be an important voice to our own community for a disease that manifests as a primary manifestation in the skin. Like, this is as much a dermatologic disease as any of the others that we see on a daily basis. So I think this is going to also bring the attention back to see our own academy sponsoring and being this title society in the guidelines and management, and then to see therapies that are recognizable, familiar, things they use on a daily basis for other diseases like atopic dermatitis. This is going to be positive for the medical communities and the patient populations who suffer with urticaria.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a really positive development. You talked about education, and I wonder, I know how German dermatologists learn and how they obtain education, continued medical education. What would be your approach to spreading the word on causes of chronic spontaneous urticaria, treatments, comorbidities, impact, course, monitoring, all of these important issues in the derm community? How do we do this education?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to have to be a multi-pronged approach. One, we need visibility, so it can't be marginalized as a topic, as you mentioned, at the AAD. I think we disproportionately get education on, you know, diseases like psoriasis, which, is particularly near and dear to my heart as I do a lot of research in that area. But the representation of, you know, a disease that's 2-3% of the population compared to some of these other, you know, common conditions, you know, I think there's been a disproportionate amount of focus in these areas. And so I think that will help just to actually build out, space within the meetings for updates in urticaria, just like we would do updates in other inflammatory conditions. So I think the forethought of getting urticaria on the topics of things that we're talking about. Also, we need to start to tackle head on some of the barriers, you know, that our colleagues have, you know, mentioned as to the reasons why they maybe don't treat these patients, that, you know, they're afraid. Angioedema is a great, just listen to the last, episode you had, I think Thomas on angioedema, the registry. And there's this misperception that if you get angioedema in urticaria, it's going to lead to anaphylaxis, right? So that's in a dermatology practice, we don't want to be resuscitating these patients, but again, that's that misperception. We need to educate there. And so, and also, this is a disease coming at it from the immunology perspective. We have so many diseases in dermatology that are T cell mediated, right? So most of our inflammatory conditions, eczema, psoriasis, HS, even cutaneous T cell lymphoma. We have a few autoimmune diseases with the immunobolus diseases or connective tissue disorders like lupus. But we have this different player that is not familiar to our group, which is that you have this mast cell that's central to the disease immunopathogenesis. Same sort of general framework, but different cell type. And I think when they understand that, they're like, okay, inflammatory condition, mast cell, we've got some immune mechanisms and we have general ways of blocking it, biologic therapies, small molecules, right? These are that framework, I think, to educate them will help them see that urticaria is not that different as a unique immunology, but the framework of management isn't all that different from the diseases they manage every single day in the clinic.
No, that's a good point. I like that very much. And I think we can make use of it in the education. Now, we also would love to see our derm colleagues in the US come on board with some of the research questions that we have, with some of the unmet needs in the understanding of certain aspects of chronic urticaria, including angioedema. I think that's a very good example. What do you think would increase the interest, curiosity, contribution of dermatologists in the US to participate in real-world research, to enter patients into the registries, care and cure, maybe to also work with CRUES, the Chronic Urticaria Self-Evaluation app. There's so many platforms and instruments and projects ongoing. How do we bring you and the US derm colleagues on board?
Yeah, one, we really need to eliminate this label of this being an allergic disease, and it really needs to be viewed again in that lens of a chronic inflammatory condition for most of these patients. And when it's viewed that way, and it's viewed as a having these subsets of disease, which for me was a shock as I started doing these lectures to hear my colleagues say, you know, I didn't ever think about it as acute versus chronic. I learned the 6 weeks cutoff, but then when you broke out the chronic and these inducible and physical urticarias, and I realized these were quite different, that I think starting to go back to some of the basics, because that the labeling and then getting back to the basics, we're really talking about this group, right? We're not so worried about the acute. And we see this all the time in the clinic. Someone gets sick or post viral infection, or even with COVID vaccinations, we'd see these acute eruptions. But that's not the group where we need the most help. And in fact, primary care, general practitioners tend to see a lot of those patients. But I think the labeling is very important, the recognition that it's a chronic inflammatory condition. And then I think most importantly, to alleviate the concerns and risk, these can be difficult patients, as you know, to get under control. And having now a variety of therapies, I think for a lot of my colleagues, it was, here's antihistamines, that didn't work. We have other immunosuppressants that I'm not thrilled about putting patients on, oral prednisone, cyclosporin, methotrexate, right? So I think there haven't been a lot of good options. So to really show that this landscape for treatment is expanding with more selective, targeted therapies with good safety profiles and a profile that's known to the dermatologists already, I think this will be a way to kind of bring it back. Because I think the diagnosis of all the things that this condition is, as a dermatologist, I think this is the one thing where I don't even need to see a patient sometimes. Exactly. Like you get that transient history, that message by our electronic health record that I get these spots, they pop up an hour or two gone. There are very, very few conditions that have that transient nature. So I think we're gonna be good on the diagnostic side. It's really going to be management and recognition that we can take this on as a specialty and work together, because allergists really know this disease well and the dermatologists can learn. I think the education cross-disciplinary will also be very useful to both, because we can bring the derm side, you know, and the skin subtleties. And I think the allergists have a great understanding of the nuances of this disease. Yeah. We want to bring this group together to teach each other.
This sounds great, Jason, and you sound very optimistic, and I love that. And we are looking forward to working with you and others. And I'm looking at the time here. Time flies, and it did. Look, I often end our episodes with the $1 million question. I'm afraid that $1 million will not make such a big dent. Let's make it $10 million. Jason, $10 million that you have to spend on improving the care of chronic urticaria patients in the derm US community. How would you go about this? How would you spend that money wisely?
Yeah, you know, I would really go after these mechanisms of disease. I think understanding, you know, the nuances between acute urticaria and some of the inducible urticaria is like, you know, what do we really understand cold urticaria as it relates to those patients that just have wheals or hives versus those patients who get predominantly angioedema versus the patients who really get both? Like, I feel like when we start to tease out those immune endotypes of disease, then we're going to open up a treasure chest, a Pandora's box of therapies where I want to be able to see these patients and say, you know what, we know a lot about the type of disease you have, and we've got a great therapy. I've always pushed hard against this one size fits all treatment. Sometimes with our industry partners, the marketing mindset or the sales mindset is, what can we get you to write our drug for every patient? And that's the opposite of what we're really trying to do as a clinician. What I want to be able to do is say, I saw this patient, took their history and the little subtleties of their disease. This treatment is going to be high likelihood of success, high likelihood of a fast response. And I think if we could really get closer to that personalized approach to care, that would be to me the $10 million or maybe $100 million question we get here. So that would be my real joy to tease out these mechanisms.
Super, just super. You have a plan. Let's make it work. We have a long way ahead of us, but it sounds like a lot of fun, and our efforts really paying off in the end in the interest of patients in the US. So very much looking forward to that. With that, Jason, thank you so much for coming on, and I will talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great. I'm really looking forward to this partnership.
Super. Folks, this is all the time we have with Jason, eminent dermatologist from California, urticaria fan and expert, and on our joint journey to have US dermatologists love urticaria, love and understand and provide good treatment. That's one of the focus areas that UCARE, the UCARE Network, has identified, and we will be working together on this. If you have questions on what we talked about, do let us know. If you have suggestions on what you would like to be the topic of one of the future episodes of All Things Urticaria, shoot me an email. Always happy to hear from you. If you haven't listened to all of the episodes yet, do that, because there's a lot of interesting previous episodes that I think you will like. 30,000 downloads as of now shows that some people really benefit and like and come back to All Things Urticaria. So until our next episode of All Things Urticaria, be well, stay healthy, and we will listen to each other soon. Bye-bye.